HeritageRadioNetwork.com. We are burning down the house. I'm Curtis B. Wayne, your host. What's today's date? What are we? The 17th of November. Wow.
My mom.
How the days go by. Hello to our friends in Helsinki. I understand we are very big in Scandinavia. That is so very cool. I'm tempted to say something in Swedish, which, of course, you people in Finland wouldn't be all that interested in. Those nasty Swedes. Today, we're going to talk about an American topic. In studio with us is the ever-popular Caroline Bailey. Here is Vox Populi.
Hello.
Yes, come a little closer. I really couldn't hear you. Are you lit?
Can you hear me well?
Hey, Dan, is she lit? I'm not sure. And Dr. Jacob Allspector, architect of New York.
Howdy doody.
We are brought to you this evening by Cabot Cheese, one of the favorites here at Heritage Radio Network. So what we have to say about Cabot. So hold on. We're having a moment of technical dismay. I think that Caroline's mic is not plugged in. Nothing like a little preamp fun. Cabot Cheese, for holiday recipes, let the great taste of Cabot Cheese make them even more special. Award-winning Cabot Cheese, 100% of our profits go to New England and New York farm families on the web at CabotCheese.com. How cool is that? And to be joining us through the wonders of telecommunications will be two other guests, architect Matthew Arnold, who's done some very interesting research recently, and our good friend Katie Provence-Basich, who is founding the Verb School, an alternative design school, which in the beginning will not be accredited. And that's something that we're going to be talking about, accreditation and professional degrees. And for you, our friends overseas, you'll know that your system of licensure is really quite different from ours. And even from state to state, we have some federal issues here in the United States, which we will get into. It seems always that in architecture, we're always at a crossroads. It seems that things just keep changing so rapidly, even though as a profession, architecture is rather static.
No one's ever satisfied, are they?
Well, I'm never satisfied. I don't know about you, Jake.
Occasionally,
but
don't last long.
But I do want to get Matt and Katie roped in. So let's have our first musical break while you dial them up.
Oh,
Very nice. Burning Down the House is a weekly event of design, architecture, and the creative arts here on heritageradionetwork.com. But you already knew that because you found us through the genius of the internet. Brought to you by Cabot Cheese. Cabot Cheese of Vermont. Dairy farm family owned since 1919 and proud to be voted your four-time champion cheddar. Five generations of farming and making naturally aged cheddar cheese in Vermont. On the web at cabotcheese.com. Do we have our telecommuting friends on the line?
I'm here. Hi,
hey.
Curtis.
Hi, Katie.
Okay. I'm here, too.
Hey, super. You guys sound 5x5. This is so great. This is terrific. Well, you know, licensure in the United States. I mean, even why bother get licensed when you've got people like Preston Scott Cohen, who designs buildings. He's the head of the Department of Architecture at Harvard Design School, and he's not a licensed architect. Why bother?
Ranting again, Curtis.
Why bother?
I like it.
Why bother to get a professional degree when, in fact, Matt, you've found some very interesting data in
very
your research. Why don't you tell us about this little map that you've put together? Which, by the way,
it's kind of a little side project. Just for the fun of it, I was wondering where the population of architects were, and so I looked at the NCARB website, and I noticed that there are many states that don't require an accredited degree. You can get licensed with other forms of experience and non-accredited degrees. And it turns out that about half the architects practicing in the United States are practicing in those states.
States that do not require a professional degree in order to qualify
right.
for the license exam, right?
Right. So you've got Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, New York, Maryland, Tennessee, Illinois, Missouri, Oklahoma, Colorado, Arizona, California, Idaho, Washington, and
Hawaii. Yeah.
And Wisconsin.
Right.
So that's... You know what, 16 of the 50 states, but it actually accounts for almost exactly half the licenses.
Sure. I mean, California, Illinois, and New York are the most popular, some of the most popular states in the union, so yeah.
So NCARB creates this, I mean, they have a video up on YouTube that says, you know, it's all about going to an accredited school. That all the state boards aren't really on board with that.
Right.
And, you know, Australia and NCARB wants to do it. Apparently, for half the population of architects, it's not a regime that's mandatory.
Matt, we're getting some sort of strange, you know, interference there. Are you next to a police radio scanner or something like
that? No. There's really not a lot I can do.
Okay. All right. Very good. For those of you listening...
He's being jammed by NAB.
Who are civilians.
I shouldn't say that. We're about to get our accreditation.
Right. NCARB is the National Council of Architectural Registration Boards. It's intended to be a clearinghouse for credentials for cross-state licensing, but it's grown into something much bigger. And NAB is the National... Architectural Accreditation Board.
National Association of
Right. They're the people who accredit schools. And they visit. And they look at your curriculum. And they talk to your professors. And they try to determine whether the kiddies are being taught the right kind of stuff.
And they look at the work.
Right.
They read. That's right.
And you got to...
They publish a report that says that one-third of the faculty of architecture schools are licensed architects.
Only one-third.
That's right, and they think that's fine, apparently.
Well, you know, I had a brief conversation with Dean Judy DeMaio, very brief, who defends the non-architect teaching, because there are so many other... I mean, there are things that we study in architecture school that are not architectural design. You know, we have to learn mechanical systems, and we have structural engineering that we have to learn, which is mostly, usually not taught by an architect, although I teach structures. Most structural professors or structural engineers themselves.
So what's her deal? What is she saying?
She says that that it need not be architects teaching architecture, which it strikes me as it's a very bogus notion. I mean, imagine a medical school where the professors are not physicians.
Mm-hmm. Or, well, here's a real problem.
Or a law school being taught
so long to get licensed that the relevance of a accredited degree is really called into question, in my view.
Sure, absolutely.
If it takes you 8 years to go from graduation to licensure, or 10 years, or 12 years, how much of that education is informing your qualifications? Yeah. To me, it's very little.
Well, it shouldn't take that long. I mean, it could take as little as 2 or 3 years, depending on your degree, if you're right on top.
That's great.
And also,
for 5% of the population of us, that's what it's taken.
Yeah. I mean, in reality, unless you, I know I got my license about 4 years out of school, and I never really even used it until maybe, 6 or 7 years later. And that was, freelance. I was working for a firm. And now I use it all the time. I have my own firm. But it took, 25 years.
You actually sign and seal your own drawings.
I definitely do, man. I'm on the hook.
Yeah.
Life, limb, and property.
Yeah, me too. I mean, yeah, you're right. For the first few years as a young architect, you're writing letters really to your mother and you're sealing it.
Yeah, I mean,
with
some
stamp
people get lucky
nice.
and they get a commission and they want to sign and seal it. A lot of people who do, will have a consulting architect who will, certify that everything's okay.
But I think it's very interesting that when we look at these very populous states that allow you to qualify, theoretically anyway, just through straight apprenticeship of 9 to 12 years, depending on the state, that, the whole notion that you should have a professional degree starts to fade in importance.
It's interesting. I recently, as I'm coordinating the fifth year, which is the last year in the professional degree program at City College, and I was talking to the fourth year students and saying to them, and at City College, they can graduate after 4 years with a Bachelor of Science in Architecture and still work. And I told them they could still work for, a dozen years and qualify for the exam and take it and pass it and become an architect without getting into the fifth year at school and getting their professional degree instead of their undergraduate non-professional degree. They get an undergraduate professional degree.
Which is a bachelor's of architecture.
Yeah, the professional degree, bachelor of architecture, but then get a bachelor of science in architecture after 4 years. And one of the professors corrected me and said, well, you shouldn't do that because then, you can't get NCARB, which is another sort of structure that sort of is reciprocation of licensure in various states. But I thought it was a good option to present to these people because some of them are actually, at least at City College, they're very very focused. Some of them have families and they're not wealthy. They can't even afford the reduced tuition at City College sometimes.
How much is that a year about?
I don't know, but I think it's going, it's probably $5,000 or $6,000.
A year?
Yeah. And some of them can't afford that.
For a full 32-credit, two-semester
plan? I think so. I may be misspeaking, and I don't want anyone to get the wrong impression. But a lot of them don't, and a lot of them opt out after 4 years and just work. Whether they ever become licensed or not, don't know. Most of the profession that comes out of school ends up probably, and correct me if I'm wrong, probably just working and never stamping drawings anyway, even if they had a license. So they're just in the employ of architects who are licensed. And lots of big firms and lots of people who know what they're doing are very qualified. And in fact, I have a very qualified employee in my own office who's not licensed, never bothered to get it. But he knows a lot more than many licensed architects.
Mm. Yeah, well, that... We find ourselves in a very strange position here of saying unlicensed architect, which is like saying a lawyer who doesn't belong to the Bar Association, mm-hmm. or a physician who's not passed the medical license exam. I mean, you're either an architect or you're not an architect, which...
Technically speaking, that's correct.
Well, let's be precise with our language
there. Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, you're absolutely right. I would.
You know,
totally
I had a rather lengthy correspondence with the online editor at TED. You know, the think tanky mm-hmm. people. Mm-hmm. They have a profile up of Liz Diller. It says Liz Diller, architect. I wrote. I said, "Yeah, you of all people should be precise here." I mean, TED is sort of a platinum standard of excellence. Liz is not an architect. She is not licensed, therefore she is not an architect, any more than Ray Eames, just because she lived with Charles Eames for 50 years, was not an architect. She was, a good designer, but she was no architect.
Curtis, you invite me on this program to be the interlocutor. Whatever.
No,
that
means. No, you're just a guest.
Okay, I'm a guest tonight.
Caroline's the guest interlocutor.
Oh, okay.
She's winding up for a pitch over there.
Frank Lloyd Wright never had a license.
Sure he did.
No, he didn't.
You mean in New York State?
Well, I've seen the drawings for the Guggenheim, and they're stamped by William Wesley Peters, P.E.
His son-in-law.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, and he had an associated local firm.
Yeah, well, you would kind of need that for
drawings.
Construction.
But, I mean, they were the...
Well, it was
and
a big
you do
row.
That. I mean, in practice, even if you're licensed and you're licensed in other states, you generally, if you're doing a reasonably sized project in another state, you generally get a local architect.
Yeah, of course.
To supervise and to take responsibility, and the local building departments like to see that.
Which is all well and good, mm-hmm. but I've read about this. Practically made holy war against New York State because, I mean, after all, he was Frank Lloyd Wright, and they would not give him a license for the one project, just for the Guggenheim. They just absolutely refused. They said, as far as we're concerned, you're just a guy from Wisconsin.
You mean a license or a permit?
A license.
Okay.
He wanted a New York license for one project. Yeah. Some states will give you a one project exemption. Can you imagine being, hounded by the world's most famous architect?
Right.
Oh, my God.
But, Robert Moses finally interceded on his behalf. Didn't give him a license, but actually got his building with a few changes.
Approved.
Like an extra fire stair or two and things like that passed by the building department. And
I did not know that.
Given a permit.
That's,
yep.
That's what happened.
Yeah.
But then the Guggenheim started crumbling. So maybe he didn't need a license.
Well, that's because they didn't have enough money. And the builder who came in was a road builder, and he suggested a lot of value engineering things, and they finally fixed that in recent years.
Yeah.
But it still looks like it's had cellulite surgery.
It still doesn't matter, actually.
Yeah,
in my
it's amazing.
Yeah.
So,
what do you think of this, being a non-professional?
Well, working there, I had to preach how amazing it was, so... I got the propaganda in my brain. So.
Yeah.
But I like it. The restoration was great, and once they did that, you felt safe going up the spiral. And as long as I'm not falling through the floors, I'm fine.
I never feel safe going up the spiral. it gives me feelings of acid flashback. Like, oh no, I'm going to fly over this tiny little parapet. Which, I don't... How do they get away with that little tiny thing?
Grandfather. You know about
the grandfather?
Yeah.
Grandfather.
We all have grandfathers somewhere.
I mean, I don't even think it's safe. I mean, I think it's too low.
It's not,
it is.
But
well,
you know
the
what?
Wall? Yeah. It is too
but
low.
But you know what? Unlike one of my other clients, NYU, with a legal height parapet on their atrium at the Pope's Library, which has been the scene, unfortunately, of a few suicides.
Yeah.
Even with barriers very high. People to my knowledge, there's never been anything like that at the Guggenheim.
No one ever jumped in there?
And it's a 3-foot parapet.
Yeah.
And I think it's because the wall slopes out, and it makes you so uneasy as you approach it that to lean against it is a sure sign that you're just going to go over. So people just don't do
it.
They
God.
Stay away. They stay away.
Interesting. Well, let's... let's have a little bit of some American music and get back to talking about this crazy state of licensure between the states and where we get to where we get there. So the next track, please. Oh, yeah. Bruce, Bruce, Bruce. You'd think you could have had a few more lyrics other than just Born in the USA. I mean, just E Street Band. You know, I saw Springsteen before he was famous, and his act has not changed in 35 years.
Which is good. He keeps it to the soul. He's the soul of America.
Yeah, with his soul patch, you know. His,
oh, his, leave him alone.
His gravelly voice. It's okay. I can rank on Springsteen because
he can take
I am
it.
Springsteen.
No, because I'm a former Jersey guy. I went. My parents moved to New Jersey so that I would have the privilege of going to high school with the real Sopranos. But that's a story for another time. It's possible I may never be able to go back to that town now and run my mouth. KDP,
yes.
Tell us about Verb School. How are you doing with that? How's it coming along?
It's coming along slowly. I have a lot of learning to do about how to start a school. I talked to one of my former professors at the Los Angeles Institute of Architecture and Design, and he shared with me all the things he went through to start his school. And there are many, many regulatory boards here in California that he had to go through, he was telling me about. So at this point, I'm really looking at how do we structure Verb so that it's the most beneficial to the students. And one thing I was struggling with is, do I structure it so that it can eventually be accredited? But then in a lot of conversations with you and with Matt, I started to really wonder if there was any value to that.
Yeah. I mean, if half the states, half the population of architects are in states where plain old-fashioned apprenticeship is satisfactory to those states to sit for the licensing exam, and given the extreme cost of a professional degree program.
Yes. Yeah, I wish I had seen this this map of Matt's. It's up. We put the map up on my website, architectureaddiction.com. The title is Jurisdiction Requirements, or What is Your Tuition Money Actually Buying You? I wish I had seen this before I went to school and doubled my student loan debt. I had no idea that I could become an architect without the time and expense of graduate school.
However, as time goes forward, more and more states, despite this approach to apprenticeship, are adopting the NCARB Intern Development Program rules, the IDP, as a way of just keeping track of their candidates. And NCARB is toxic when it comes to the issue of learning through apprenticeship. And as a practical matter, there are some of these the things that we need to know as architects that it would be rather difficult to learn through self-study. I mean, not everybody's a whiz and could just pick up a book and understand a lot of this stuff. Mm-hmm. Some fairly arcane information.
I think learning by a book almost anything is not the right way to learn something.
Right.
What I propose in Verb is to be out building something, to learn everything about the site, design based on that, and then actually build it. What my biggest disappointment, and I've talked about this before, my biggest disappointment with architecture school is the only building I ever saw was the inside of my little cubby. I was staring at a computer all day long. I learned how to design things that would never be built in a non-space in a computer that didn't have a climate or a building code or a budget or anything. Everything is false. And after a while, I started to really question the logic of teaching people that way. It seems like you spend a lot of time and a lot of money and a lot of stress, and at the end you have a piece of paper that says Harvard on it, but you've never actually built anything. And then you're supposed to go out in the world and design buildings, having never built a building in your life.
I agree with that.
Ludicrous.
Well, it's
totally
like
ridiculous.
Learning to drive. You can learn all you want about driving, but once you get behind the wheel, doesn't
it's
matter
different.
If you can't do it, you can't do it. If you're not good at it, you're not good at it. And some people are
right.
Naturals. So if you can build, you can build.
And
right,
I kind
so
of prefer
that
I have a licensed
firm,
driver
that...
teaching me. Sorry. Just skip it in. Go ahead.
You're absolutely
what
right.
What I want to do with Verb is spend a few years actually building so that at the end of the program you have several years' experience really doing the thing that you came to study. In architecture school, you come to learn how to design and build a building and how to really know how to do that. And then at the end, you know how to work a lot of computer programs, and then you get to go be somebody's CAD monkey for years.
Yep.
There are some practical limitations to your approach, however, when it comes to the structural design of your structure. While you're building it, is really kind of, it's too late to be figuring out the structural design.
That's the old empirical method.
That's right.
But you're an apprentice first. You don't go out and build it yourself right away.
So Beauvais Cathedral collapsed.
Right.
Few lessons.
Though. Yeah, right. And then they try to figure out why it fell in, and they try to make it better the next time.
Yeah.
we were just talking about that today. You know,
Beauvais. Yeah.
Well, no, actually, we're talking about Canterbury. Geoffrey Chaucer was clerk of the works at Canterbury Cathedral. It's where he collected all the Canterbury tales, all the tradesmen coming in from all over the countryside to build the cathedral. So that was his day job.
Well, of course, you know, architecture is, you know, the architect's the master builder. And
we should hope.
That's right. And traditionally, he was the guy who came up through the ranks, just like you're talking about.
That's right.
You learned all the trades and knew all of them so that he could direct them all eventually. And they all deferred to him because he had the most experience.
Right. And that does not often obtain anymore.
No.
You know, and I was wondering, in everybody else's experience, what do contractors and construction workers think of the architect who comes in thinking that he knows something?
Most of them have disdain.
Oh, yeah.
Thinly veiled disdain for architects. And
do you think that's well-earned, Jake?
I do think it's well-earned these days from what I see, unfortunately. I mean, I'm one who really, I mean, just so to make my position clear, you know, I teach. I also, you know, started learning about architecture in high school. So I kind of have a background, and I started doing, you know, interning and apprenticing. So I like both the theoretical and the practical, and I hate to sound like a middle of the roader, but I really think it's important to have the two. And I think there are things you can get in architecture school, and to sort of echo what Dean Hayduck used to say at Cooper Union, is there are only certain things you can learn in architecture school. The rest you can learn by doing. And
that's true.
That's enrichment.
That was an article of faith with him that architecture school exists primarily for the purpose of exploring design, and the rest of it, indeed, are although Cooper was very good at teaching us,
absolutely, it was small enough you could do that. Stuff. You could do that, and you could really have a handle on it. And plus, you know, their entrance requirements and all that sort of stuff ensured that people were reasonably intelligent and had good math and science backgrounds and all of that sort of stuff, which you need for those technical subjects, really, to do it. Nowadays, I'm shocked. You don't even need to have calculus in your curriculum, but you need to know how to draw a reflected ceiling plan or something dumb like that.
Jacob, let me ask you something. When you guys went to Cooper, and Cooper's reputation is certainly not a nuts and bolts school.
Correct.
You guys went there. If you took your professors and put them in a bag and shook out the ones that were licensed, how many would you have left in the bag?
Well, in my day, in the dark ages of I graduated, I went from 66 to 72. Most of them were licensed.
Yeah,
all but one.
Most of them.
All but one.
Who?
Bob Slesky.
Yeah, see, now that's funny.
Yeah, well, he was.
About, you know, the history teachers and the structure teachers don't need to have a license.
Well, the history teacher is different. I think history is a little different, and I sort of think there's a current trend of having lots of deans of architecture school is primarily historians, whether they're licensed or not, I'm not sure, which is, you know, kind of somewhat disturbing, but it's not the end of the world. I think the program needs to have balance. I think it needs to have an integration of the technological and the artistic. And, you know, it's no sense being able to do great technically superb buildings if they're ugly as sin and people hate them, you know, and they just want to tear them down, you know. So beauty and aesthetics, I think, in that whole aspect
You don't want to sound like an aesthete, but I find, you know, I think they're extremely valuable and necessary. And NAB, I don't think, spends enough time, you know, talking about those, because those things are very hard to quantify.
What things? The
aesthetics,
the aesthetic training,
beauty, all of this other stuff, which you need. And I'm not trying to shortchange, you know, technology at all. But I think the two of them work together.
But I find in conversations that I've had with some of your colleagues at City College, and some of the people who teach at our alma mater, mm-hmm. and some people who teach at that other design school that I went to up there in Cambridge, mm-hmm. the students are certainly not discouraged from emulating the design peculiarities of essentially non-technological expression, like Zaha Hadid. Okay, you look at the Maxi Center that she's just completed, mm-hmm. there, and it's structurally speaking, it's a nightmare. You know, it's a full scale a model that could only have been done almost like extruded pasta shapes. Writ large, it's structurally idiotic.
Look, nowadays, if you can design something, you can find a way to build it, right? There's lots of technology.
Well, sure.
And go ahead, Matt.
I just want to say that I really, really resent the implication that a person who argues for practical construction knowledge is arguing against beauty.
I totally agree with you.
I think that a person who knows how to build and knows where the sun comes up and the sun goes down and what it does, what temperature is, all that stuff, that is what makes beauty possible.
Absolutely.
And maybe this whole dispute is implicit in the contradiction in architecture of art and science. But I don't think anybody who's arguing for science is arguing against art. That's really wrong.
I agree.
And the people who want to push that down our throats are full of shit, because they're saying, "Oh, it's all art, and you're just a technocrat."
Agree.
No,
I mean,
I'm saying, if you want a beautiful place, I'm going to have to be dry, and I'm going to have to be warm.
Absolutely.
And I'm going to have to be dry and warm for a long time, and I want to spend my money smart.
And I think what you're saying is
smart means beautiful,
right? And I think what you're saying is
all that other stuff.
Yeah, it's necessary but not sufficient, and that's what I always
say
to my students.
And
these things are all necessary, but you got to go beyond that.
Yeah, Matt, you've just stated our good buddy Viollet Le Duc's thesis.
There you go. We keep coming back to
1867.
That guy, don't we?
We do.
But here's the problem: those guys in the art end of it are saying, "Oh, art, art, art." Well, that's not necessary, or it's not sufficient.
It's not sufficient.
You can't say it's sufficient.
It's not sufficient. That's correct.
They can't.
So in certain
ways.
But
they focus, I mean.
The complete thing, not half the thing.
Here's the thing. Every academy has their specialists, and we have the specialty world. So you get the people who study aesthetics as something in and of itself. And if you really studied aesthetics really does, as you're describing, I think, really have to do with the tectonic as well as the beauty, so to speak, or the beauty is integral with it. And that's a really hard concept for a lot of people to put together.
Architectonics is a really deep,
if
taught properly, is the basic formation of space and the manipulation of form we call architectonics, because it's not just design. Design could be like, you know, fashion,
right,
and stylization, but the manipulation of
but it also resonates with materiality and structure and culture and all of those things.
And to do it properly, you really have to have a hunger for integrating all of these things together. Dan, can we have the next piece of music?
I wish we could have Louis Kahn speak about this issue.
Yeah.
Oh, hello. Welcome back to Burning Down the House on HeritageRadioNetwork.com, brought to you by Cabot Cheese of Vermont. Oh my God, what was that? Space Invaders. Uh-oh, I think we've lost our phone link. Cabot Cheese of Vermont, since 1919.
Having a little chaos here. That's great.
Yes.
We love that.
For your favorite party recipes, let the great taste of Cabot Cheese make them even more special. Award-winning Cabot Cheese. 100% of our profits go to New England and New York farm families. On the web at CabotCheese.com. Did we lose our telephone guests? Yeah? You're going to get them back? Okay, good.
I think they should require guitar in architecture school.
I think it's a requirement. Matter of fact, if you're going to work at Google, you have to play, you know, guitar. And
skateboard.
Skateboard's good. Yeah, yeah. I mean, to the extent that actually our experiences as living human beings are diversified. Actually, I think our architecture is better. You know Nick Agneta, right?
Yeah, yeah.
He's a fantastic musician.
Yeah, he is.
He's a really, and we've played some of his music on this program. And I was just talking this afternoon. We're talking about how music informs our work as designers.
Absolutely.
We get a musical idea, and somehow it turns into a formalistic expression that then you have to solve technologically.
Music is a wonderful analogy for architecture. There's so many things you can do that way.
Yeah.
Because if you don't...
Pardon? Katie
should be back. Oh. Katie, you're back?
We had some technical issues, but I'm back.
Okay, good, good. Are you going to have a musical program at Verb?
Yeah, we're talking about...
Yeah, we have music as part of the curriculum.
Maybe I'll do theater, too, like the Bauhaus, and they can dress up in geometric shapes.
Nice.
That would be good. Yeah, like the...
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
some
the
new
Oscar
wave.
Slimmer things, yeah. Okay. We were talking about the complexity of really, actually really doing architecture is... it's what really... it's challenging, but it's also what makes us tick. It makes one of the reasons that we want to... be architects is because everything counts and everything informs back and forth and back and forth, just mm-hmm. like the counterpoint of a Bach piece is how design thinking works.
I always love to my students anyway analogize music. Say, you know, if you're a composer or a conductor, you need to know how to play certain things. You don't need to be an expert, but you really know how to. You really need to know them to be able to
absolutely
to coordinate them. That's
right.
What an architect does these days more than ever. So, you know, it's an interesting question. I was thinking before, you know, when you talk about technical subjects, you know, we all learn structures and we all learn mathematics and all these things, and they're windows into thinking more than they are things that we actually employ, although we can employ them. And often modern practice employs consultants and experts in these things who really stay on top of those things and really give you, you know, all of the insights that you need, sort of like the specialists and the soloists that you would have as a composer or conductor.
Right, but I think the degree to which you are informed about the specialties.
You have to know. You can't be someone who's
really
in the state and
yeah.
comes in and says,
yeah.
oh, here's what you got to play on the violin, and you're crazy. You can't play this on the violin.
No, because we are the composer, and we have to know the voice of the instrument, which
course,
means
these
knowing
days,
the trade.
People will say, well, I can do that on the computer and the synthesizer or whatever.
I can do that on my iPhone
no.
app.
No?
No, the real thing or nothing at all.
Well, I'm a big fan of freehand drawing to scale, because there's a hand-eye thing that happens there that is really informative.
We're old, man. I agree
Rather
with you, but
CAD.
We're old.
I mean, when the when the grid goes down, the people with pencils will rule.
I still use my pencils, man.
Hey, you can use it as a weapon.
Sorry, Matt.
Go ahead, Katie. It's just been bugging me. We're trying to read. I've been talking with Katie a little bit about
how to make a school and what's important. And we, you know, put all this brain power into it, and we come up with a lot of the things they were doing at Taliesin.
Uh-huh.
I remember reading about Wright and all this. You know, they had to get dressed up at night and play their instruments and do a little performance, and then they
went
out in the daytime and dragged stones around the desert and built stuff. Like, geez, how come we're having to think so hard when this guy was there 100 years ago?
Yeah, and the Bauhaus did the same thing.
Right.
And if you read Vitruvius, they talk about the same things, you know?
I know.
Yeah.
I mean, Mies was a bricklayer.
Right. So was Palladio was the son of a stone mason. That's
right.
Know
how to build.
Even though most of them were covered in stucco on brick, but
what's that?
The idea was there.
He knew it.
Oh, yeah.
Palladio.
The Palladian ones, sure. Yeah.
He wasn't licensed.
No, and look, in other countries, once you have your diploma,
you are licensed.
That's it. You know, you're an architect. But then they will go to school much longer in Spain. They'll be in university for 8 years.
And they have to take a year or two off and work in an office.
Right. And their final exam is like our architectural registration exam. Mm-hmm. So it's very rigorous. It's just different.
They have competent universities there.
Well, we have a few competent universities. Katie's unhappiness with Harvard Design School notwithstanding. Look, I was no fan when I was a student there either.
Why did you guys go to graduate school? I have an interesting question for you. I mean, why did you go, Curtis? You had a Bachelor of Architecture degree, professional degree.
Right.
Here's a discussion. Why did you feel you needed to go since you were already in the slot?
I'm glad you asked that. Two reasons. One, there were no jobs, so I thought, well, what the hell? I may as well get a master's degree because, you know.
So why don't you go back, get another one?
Thanks.
That could be Katie's reason, too.
And two, I discovered that despite what high esteem we held Cooper Union, there were people who had never heard of it, and I kind of felt like I needed to get my AKC papers. You know, yeah. I had to get my pedigree so I could be a top dog. Mm-hmm. So, and it was also sort of expected, you know, John Haydock had gone to Harvard, and he kind of saw Cooper as the logical next step was then to continue your education, because there was so much that we did not get to, even in 5 years at Cooper.
I got the impression that he said, you don't need Harvard, you got Cooper Union.
He read a letter of recommendation for
No,
me.
Of course he would. No, there's no question.
It was either go on to Harvard, which it still had somewhat of the legacy of Walter Gropius lingering, or go to the AA, where I would have studied with Peter Cook, or the Archigram guys, you know? And
not bad.
So, and I did learn things at Harvard. You know, I had two really good classes that taught me things that I still use to this very day. One was a construction management class, which we really didn't get into that at all in the undergraduate curriculum at Cooper. And the other was acoustics, taught by this fabulous guy, Robert Newman, who was one of the founding...
Back to music.
One of the founding principals of Bolt, Brannick, and Newman, the people who really did invent the internet for DARPA in 1963. That was really it blew my mind because it was mathematically really rigorous, and we were using anti-logs and all kinds of stuff that we had not been exposed to at Cooper, and I had to learn that stuff. So there was a little bit of learning to have to do, which is okay because
I'm staring at the guitar and looking at the logarithmic arrangement of the frets.
Yeah, it is.
This is physics.
You know? Yeah. We do it for passion. We do it for love. We're not doing it for the paycheck. I mean, we work so long on the simplest things and make so little money. So, you know, it's It's a love affair. We're doing it for love. That's why we do it, because we have a passion. And the more that we learn, the better
love
we,
and lust.
The more Katie, that we the better it is.
But Katie, why did you go to Harvard?
I don't have an undergraduate degree in architecture. I did microbiology, so the next step was graduate school. Because it was after I graduated that I worked in microbiology a little bit, and I really love science and I really love art. But I found if I only did one without doing the other, I felt really empty inside. And so it was after I got my degree that I discovered my profound love for architecture. It allowed me to use both sides of my brain, and it made me feel complete. I felt an extreme passion for it that I never felt with anything else before. And so since I already had my undergraduate degree, I went straight for grad school.
That makes
and
sense.
And at the time, I thought that's what you had to do in order to get licensed. It was, I guess, the information I needed to know otherwise, just I didn't know that information was out there.
Yes, but look, a 12-year apprenticeship is no guarantee that you're going to be exposed to all the things that you do need to learn.
That's true. You could be doing toilet details.
Absolutely.
For HOK.
Yeah. I mean, for the first several years, that's what you're going to be doing anyway, because you have to learn how buildings really...
Something to be said for the IDP program, which tries to balance your experience and says you have to be exposed to all the various aspects of practice?
I have no gripe with the whole notion of IDP.
I do.
I know you do.
Let's hear from Matt on this.
Yeah, let's hear about it.
Well, there's no mandate on the employer. The IDP enrollee, the intern, has no control over the quality or the duration of their internship. And I think that's a bad system design. It offends my design sensibility. So, I think people should be apprenticed. Yeah, that's the best way to do it. But I think there's a component that the intern has to provide and a component that the architect who's supervising the internship has to provide, but there is no way to enforce that on the supervising architect. So internship takes 12 years. You know, Jake, you're telling folks it'll take you 12 years if you drop out this year. On average, in New York, it's 12 years between graduation and licensure for people with accredited degrees.
I totally agree. And there's no guarantee, and that's average, right?
That's true.
So some
that's
people can
average.
Spend now, 20 years and not learn the stuff they need to learn to pass the exams,
because,
unless they're real good test takers or
because
whatever.
Because the social contract on which that supposition of internship is based has died.
Here's the thing.
We used to
there was a responsibility. You're right.
Yeah, we used to teach in the studio. I mean, in the professional studio. I mean, in the architect's studio. We used to teach. And the reason that we do not teach any longer is because of the change in the gestalt of how we're producing the drawings. When you look at an image, digital, on your computer screen, you're not seeing the thing the way that we see it when we're looking at a drawing. It just simply, it's human physiology. So the constant feedback that used to happen in the studio where the old guys, you know, like me, would be walking around looking at what people were doing, you could see in a glance if they'd made a mistake and you could correct it right then, right there. And you'd have a conversation about, what are you doing and why you're drawing it that way because it's wrong. That doesn't happen any longer. Until or unless you have check plots.
It's definitely more bureaucratic.
Yeah, it is. And so the teaching doesn't happen.
The world is more bureaucratic.
Well, that's true, but that doesn't make it good.
No.
It doesn't make it good.
But that's where we are.
We either got to give up our technology or, somehow learn how to manage it, you know?
That's why this whole economic collapse is a blessing, because we're going to become a lot more results-oriented. Instead of checking boxes in a form, we're going to become results-oriented, and that's great.
So where is this school going to be? Because where is this going to
be? It's going to be all over the place, right?
Cool.
Yeah, wherever the site is, that's where the learning happens. I'm thinking after seeing this map, we'll just have sites in the red states here.
Okay, well, that's fine. I mean, look, it's like all of life. It goes on, and...
I think it's great.
Results-based. You know, that's good. Me, I'm looking for a future that's love-based, you know? And so, Dan, I think we're going to have to go out with a little love song from Patti Smith. Thank you for listening. This has been Burning Down the House, brought to you by Cabot Cheese.
All right, Cabot.
Take me now, baby, here as I am. Pull me close, try and understand. Desire is hunger, is the fire I breathe. Love is a banquet on which we feed. Disguised as lust, here in our bed until the morning.